have any conversation before we need to record an episode. You have notes. I love you so much.
I just have my introduction part written down because otherwise I forget who I am. What am I doing? What's here? Anyways.
You have notes. Did you bring any other content?
I mean, we talked last night, so I have like vague things in my head that we're going to be talking about. So I should get my copy just in case we read things.
Just get all the books we could potentially talk about at the ready.
We talked about this one last night. Okay, good. I got some good novels here.
I love it. Okay, I'm going to sip of tea and I'm just going to say an intro. This is Stems and Leaves. I'm Ezra, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Lila. This is a show where we explore intersectional stories in STEM, among other things. New tagline to be determined as this thing continues to evolve. But I've recruited friends, and the friend that's joining me is Lila. Hey.
Hi, I'm Lila. When Ezra asked me to tell them how I want to be introduced on this podcast, I froze up for literally a month. Like, who the heck am I? Why am I here? But now I am here. And I'm so excited to be joining onto this project. So I guess just for some context of who I am as a person, I'll tell you that I am right on the line between millennial and Gen Z. I am queer in a number of ways. I use she, her pronouns mostly, but they is also fine. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and then I moved to Toronto for school, and I'm excited to be moving back to Canada soon, to Winnipeg, even though it's sad to be leaving Ezra here in Columbus. I am an urban planning master's student, and I work at an environmental nonprofit. I'm a retired figure skater, and I have a tiny dog named Cleo. I think that's it. I think the listeners now know more about me than some people that I actually know, so hopefully that's
Yeah, as you were going through that, I was like making sure. Yeah, I was like, I know all of those things.
You know all those things. We've talked.
I know all of those things. This is my friend. I know my friend. Thank you for a concise introduction. I've never done like an actual proper. I've sporadically interjected facts about myself in various episodes, so you'd have to be really committed and listen to all of my content to have even a vague sense of who I am. But since you have tidily summed yours up, although I will point out that you were reading off a paper, so it wasn't verbatim that Lila was just riffing that summary of their life. It was, I'm not bashing on you. It's your first episode. It's your second episode, actually. You know what? So yeah.
It is my second episode. I've been here before. I will say I don't have things written out to say for the rest of the time. It's just, I literally will forget who I am if it's not right there in front of me. So
yeah. We're good. But I'm the OG host, and I also produce this show. I'm Ezra. Formerly on this show, you might have heard me refer to myself as M, which is just my initials, E-M. But I go by Ezra full time now, so that's a little new for the listeners. I'm referred to by they, them pronouns, and I'm also a Zillennial. I consider Lila and I, I feel like you and I are not the same generation, but we are.
I am older than you by like a year and a half.
But a year and a half, like, I'm thinking of those alignment charts or like the spectrums. I'm thinking of like how Gen Z is. You're on the wholesome end. I'm on the sinful end. But we're both on massively queer and like liberal. It's lovely. I got off track. I'm Ezra. I am a Zillennial. I am a map maker, history nerd, urban activist, among other things. I have a lot of plants, which is what I was up to before we got into this call. I moved like 20 of the plants downstairs to the outside in preparation of next week, because I just was getting bugged at the idea of people having to touch my plants and potentially like handling them wrong. So I'm just like, I'm going to handle that. And they're all fine outside for like a week because it's not going to be tremendously hot.
Yeah, they're going to love the outside. Do you want to tell people why you're moving your plants from your current apartment?
Yeah, I am. Well, it's topical because we are both moving soon. I have the dreadful task of moving down two flights of stairs. My partner and I, we met because we're neighbors. It's a very Hallmark story. And the fact that our like first significant date was zoo lights, like we went and saw the Christmas lights at the zoo and we like held hands and it was super, super cute. But anyway,
it's so wholesome.
But anyway, we are moving in together. And so it stinks that it's like down two flights of stairs because it's so easy, like spatially. I'm moving an elevation of 20 feet, basically, and maybe 30 feet west. whereas you're moving several... How far is...
It's really far. I don't know. So moving from Winnipeg, moving to Winnipeg, where am I? Moving to Winnipeg from Columbus. It's an 18-hour drive. I don't know what that is in miles or kilometers. I should know it in both because... those are the relevant metrics. I just know it's going to take me like 3 days to drive there. And my tiny dog is going to hate it.
Yeah, Cleo's going to have a time with that. Poor Cleo. I'm moving and so are the plants. And you know my knickknack habit.
They have a lot of knickknacks. Sometimes they have knickknacks inside of knickknacks and then can't find the one that they're looking for because there's just like 12 Russian dolled inside each other.
I'm a magpie. I pick up shiny, nice objects and then I stash them away for a fun little time. And it is a problem. And in fact, one of the things that I like kind of wanted to bring to this episode was like one of my tarot decks. And I can't find the deck I was looking for. I found four other decks.
Oh my God.
But not the one that I wanted to share. So it's fine. And I'm moving. So when I unpack in the new space, I will be able to re-inventory my belongings and reestablish a sense of control over my environment. But just for like another couple days, I don't know. It feels that same, that temporariness of like summer camp. I kind of feel like I'm at summer camp. Like, I don't quite feel like I'm in my apartment anymore.
I get that. Like, you're camping, but you're also at home.
Right. And it's like, I don't know. I'm just being extra dramatic about it because I love sympathy. But your move is going to be so much more difficult. You poor thing.
It is, but I'm also not taking the majority of my stuff. Like, it's, my stuff is going to go live at my parents' house, and I'm striking out with one small car. And that's it. So hopefully I will. Yeah, my car is very small.
I love your tiny blue car. We had one thing that we really wanted to talk about in our first episode. Well, our first episode as co-hosts of this show together, because we had a little tea time last night, and it's just this one book, you know.
It really is. This book I have read. I was so late to reading this book. I know it's been published for like nearly a decade. I read it for the first time in January, and I've read it two more times since then, which is, that's like a very rapid rate of rereading for me.
The book is The Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller. I'm flipping into the copyright page to see when it actually was published. You said a decade. You already know the date off the top.
I think it's 2012, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I called it 2012. I read this for the first time in high school, I think shortly after it came out. And I was very hush-hush about it because it is gay. And in high school, I was in the closet. So reading it was like, I remember getting through it and like feeling many kinds of ways. And my mom seeing it and being like, oh, is that a good one? And I was like, it really wasn't my speed. I don't think you would like it very much because, oh man, how many times have you read it so far?
I've read it three times. I annotated it. All of this is like going above and beyond for me. Usually I like read a book. I'm like, that was a good book. And then I move on to the next. And this one has stuck with me because it is very gay, as Ezra said, which is great. That's usually a good sign on the outset for books. but it's also extremely well written and just very powerful. And there's a lot of moments that like loop back on themselves, and you're like, whoa, that just like when it deserves more than one read because you catch things in the later ones that mean more once you know the end.
It's a stunning book. I can reread it in an afternoon, or I just like can instinctually flip to a section that I'm like, yeah, that'll make me cry. 'Cause sometimes you just want to speed through that last 50 pages and like break your heart a little bit before bed, you know? But describe loose plot. Well, it's the Song of Achilles. It's based on Greek myth. I hate to spoil it for you, listener. If you're not familiar with Greek mythology, is it spoilers if we tell them that Achilles dies at the end?
I mean, you went for it. So I think it's not a spoiler, given that it is based on the Iliad. Any version of the Iliad that you have watched or read where they're like, oh, Patroclus was just some random cousin, that's incorrect. They were together. They were lovers. And it's
It's very good. So to step back even a little bit further, Achilles in the greater scheme of Greek mythology was one of the demigod heroes who's kicking it. And you're probably more familiar with like the Battle of Troy, Trojan Horse, and all of that in Greek myth, which is the big war that happened over Helen, because there was like a golden apple, and someone else was like, is Aphrodite prettier or is Helen prettier? And then Paris got involved and Helen got kidnapped. So the whole war started. Achilles is the hero that is predestined to have, you know, all kinds of painful glory. And his sidekick in the ancient myth in the cis-het retellings is like, this is just his bud that comes around and, you know, polishes the arrows and shines his boots or whatever, you know, bros.
in the like OG version though, they're also gay. It's just the intervening time people have like het washed it,
Yeah,
and
that's what
then
I'm saying.
the reclamation of the original queer tradition.
Yeah, they're through the limitations and specific retellings by the dominant paradigm, a lot of the queerness is lost from history. And so Madeline Miller takes great care to restore that in just the most delicate, tender human way. In this book, Lord, I really do just like want us to start reading from the beginning because I want people to hear this story so bad.
We don't, I feel like we don't have time on this podcast to read you the whole book. Also, there is an audiobook that already exists that's very well done. So we will direct you to that for your listening pleasure. But in terms of like what stuck with us from this book and why we keep coming back to it, Ezra, what is it, if you could draw one thing from this book and be like, this is the moment that made me think about myself differently, what would it be?
Oh my God. it's just, it makes me cry. It's so softly written, and the innocence, because it's written from Patroclus's perspective, and his observation, like growing up with Achilles. And so he's just, you know, he's a 12-year-old boy in his own head, and we watch him grow up into a 16-year-old man, or however long they lasted over at Troy. They were there for like a decade.
They get old by the end. I mean, not like old, but they're older than us by the time it ends.
'Cause they leave for the war at 16 and they're there for at least a decade.
They're there for so long. Like, such a long
Anyway, just especially the first few chapters of the book, when Patroclus is getting to know Achilles, there's all these just the language of like observing his hair and his skin and like the way the environment smells and just so much like visceral. It was very easy to just put myself in the moment and like feel those innocent feelings again. I don't know. I not to be like this is me and I want a tragic gay fic to play out in my life, obviously not. But I don't know, it had some really accessible emotions for me in particular. And so it's rare that a book does that and like can do that to me consistently, like every time I go back to it. But this book, It gets me every time. This morning I flipped open and I did read the last 50 pages just to remind myself, and I cried again. And that final scene on the cliffside, go to him, he's waiting. I'm obsessed. But what was your big takeaway? Because you when I finally recommended it to you and you finally were able to read it, I remember you texted me some reactions.
I think we were in class and like I can't focus at all because I'm still thinking about Song of Achilles. But I'll also give a moment from early in the book just so we're not. I have so many and I don't want to spoil anything that's like late and meaningful, but something early in the book, also from their childhoods that really stuck with me, was so Patroclus has not always had the most respect growing up, and Achilles, of course, is celebrated. He's a prince, he's a demigod. And so at first, Patroclus is like jealous of Achilles and kind of hates him a little bit because he sees Achilles having such an easy time and he's not. But as they start to grow closer, there's a line where Patroclus says something like, It didn't matter to me anymore that I lost because it was enough to watch him win. Obviously, because he's starting to fall in love with Achilles, which is so precious. But also, I think that both in romantic relationships and in friendships and in just like navigating the world as a human, I think that that's such an important perspective, which is that like when other people are doing great things, like we can celebrate that. And especially when those people are close to us, it's important to remember that it's not a competition and we're all just doing our best to get by. And when someone is really doing something that's fabulous for them, it's a win for all of us.
That was a very educated like analysis. I came in here with pure feeling words. I'm just like, I cry, and you're like, this is an actual. That's a very good point. I didn't really consider that the first couple times perspective. I like that a lot. But ooh, what an interesting part of love, getting past your own losses and being able to celebrate another person's wins. Relationships 101, baby.
Yeah, it really is. And it comes pretty young for them in the book, which is nice.
Is there another scene in the book that like was very salient for you?
There are so many. The dice recurring in the early parts showing how Patroclus is kind of buffeted by chance until he finds Achilles, and then after that he turns away from the dice in a very subtle but symbolic moment. I was very impressed with that when I caught it the second time I was reading it. And I just think that there really are so many layers and so much to appreciate in this book, on top of it being like good representation and like restoring queer narratives in history, which is important to begin with, even when
Yeah.
it's not like a masterful thing that destroys you every time you read it.
Right. How do you feel about the handful of women characters in the book?
I mean, I think that so Thetis is obviously a goddess and has also been through some abuse and trauma. So her character is really interesting, watching her development. But she's also, as a goddess, I think something else that we see in this book is a separation between the human and the divine in the Greek tradition, in a way that, like both for Achilles, who is a demigod, and Helen, who is also a demigod, there's an element of lack of concern for the human cost of their actions, which can be written off as selfish. Or I think in the original myth, and like in line with some of the thinking around the Greek gods and how they were conceptualized, is part of that divinity of like human life is cheap, which is terrible. But that's like a part of Thetis's character that I mean, it's just a part of Thetis's character. And then the other major woman in the book is Briseis. And man, I have a lot of feelings for Briseis. She really gets the short end of the stick.
Yeah, she really does, and the handful of dialogue that we do get with her is some of the most like I don't know. I think the dialogue that Patroclus has with Briseis is some of the most revealing for his own character. The scene that's coming to mind is, well, it's later in the book. I shouldn't say anything. No, that would be a spoiler. But when she's preparing Patroclus's body and Achilles is like mad with grief and is like, get away from the body. And she's like, do you really think you're the only one who loved him? And she kind of goes off for a second and says like some of the words that snaps Achilles out of his initial, you know, grief fog.
Their friendship is really amazing too. And I think, I'm not sure that Patroclus has really had another friend. Like he has Achilles, and Achilles is like his whole life. And then Briseis is like his first and kind of only real friend aside from that. And the way that they support each other is, it just shows that there are many facets to being human and a lot of different types of human emotion and connection that Achilles, who is this powerful demigod hero, is maybe put on some of the other aspects of just being human. And Patroclus is able to reclaim that in ways that are really touching throughout the book. The end is really sad. It is a tragedy. We don't want to spoil exactly how it plays out, but you should read the book.
Yes.
If we made that clear already.
It is. Ooh, it's starting to rain.
It's raining so hard.
Yeah, if we get some background noise, that's aesthetic now. Was there anything about the book that was difficult for you or that you didn't care?
Honestly, no. There was nothing about this book that I didn't like.
I will say, as a person who reads aloud to other people, if you're not already familiar with some of the Greek mythology, like I read Percy Jackson and the Olympians in high school, and I'm a nerd, so like I know about Hades and Persephone, like I'm into it, but without that familiarity, I think there's a lot of like other secret stories tucked away in here with like the greater web of Greek mythology, and my familiarity with that made it a lot more accessible. But I've been reading this aloud to Izzy, and it's been much harder for him to follow some of the storylines because Patroclus, Menelaus, Elymides, Automenon, the names are very complex, and there's a lot of referring to people as son of this and son of that. And yeah, I'm going to move right on. Do you have anything else to say about the book? I feel like if I spend any more time,
I'm going to tell people the whole story, and I don't want to do that because I want them to go read the book and feel all these feelings for themselves.
But anyway, The Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller, we highly, highly recommend, as well as another book by her that I don't have in front of me, but it's Circe.
Yeah, also excellent.
Also excellent. Similar, it's sensitive retelling and from a different perspective, from Odysseus, the story of the Odyssey, when he is stranded on her island, because in like classic myth, she's the witch that turns his men into pigs, and it's a very, she plays a plot point in Odysseus's story, but this is her story.
It's really her own epic too, because she is involved in so many, like if you don't know a lot about Greek mythology and you want a way to like get a really well done touch point for like a good handful of the more prominent myths and some other like smaller ones, Circe is a great entry point because it weaves them all together, because Circe lives forever, so everything is like in chronological order like throughout her life. Yeah, it's a really good retelling, and if you do know Greek mythology, then you're gonna come on every story and be like, I know this too. So Another great read.
After I revisited Song of Achilles as an adult, I picked up Circe, and I was like, oh, Odysseus, he's just on his way back from the thing I was just reading. And it was it's so good. It felt like I was in on a little secret, even though the secret is Greek mythology that has been accessible to us broadly via the internet for the past decade. And it's been in scholarly literature for at least 150 years before that, so...
And also, we love to see Greek mythology get picked up and used for good, because I think in U.S. dominant culture, a lot of these stories do float around, and people can sometimes take them and use them to justify like really racist ideology. And reclaiming the narratives not just for queerness, but also for feminism and for anti-racism and for being just a decent human is something that these books also do.
Excellent, excellent author, excellent books, highly recommended. Do we have any other content we want to?
I don't know. I think this first episode, we might have just turned it into the Madeline Miller fan club, but we'll be bringing you some other hot takes on other things.
I like that. All right. Do we want to give ourselves homework before next episode of things we want to talk about? I gave Moss homework, so it would be easier for us to come back to the table next time. Just, you know, things to ponder.
What intentions are we setting for next time?
Next time I intend to bring the actual tarot deck I was looking for and do a fun little quick history on tarot and maybe like a 2-card pull for each of us just to be silly.
Nice. I love that.
Or maybe we'll pull a card for the listener and predict what all 30 people that listen to this show. I did tell Moss about our target audience, and I think your friends in Canada have given me a little bit of a boost. And so it's like, I'm pretty sure our audience is going to be like, your very sweet friends in Canada. And then like me and Moss's handful of OSU people. And that's fine. I love that for us. But it will mean that this show is being listened to by people that like know us, which is also a little intimidating. Anyway, this is Stems and Leaves. This is a podcast where me and a couple of my friends talk about things that we love, and we check in with each other and hype each other up, because these are people that I love that are out doing cool things in the world and have cool things to share. Lila, any closing thoughts?
Not particularly. I feel like we covered a lot on this episode, and it's so great to chat with you as always, and hopefully our select audience of friends will appreciate hearing our thoughts out in the world.
I love it. It's Stems and Leaves, from us to you. I think we just say goodbye now. Bye. What I mean is that you don't